Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we talk about McLaren's signing of Carlos Sainz and discuss safety in Formula One. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone to episode 103 of the Fastest Lab podcast. And so, yeah, last week we already discussed possible move of Carlos Sainz now that Red Bull had signed Daniel Ricciardo, that he could actually move to McLaren. And so indeed that happened. McLaren announced Carlos Sainz for 2019. No big surprise there then, right?
No, there was no major surprise. It was a deal that I think we all thought was on its way. And yeah, I mean, overall, I'm really happy for Sainz. The one thing that it does now is it releases him altogether from the Red Bull contract. Even, you know, this year when he was at loan at Renault, he was still under contract by Red Bull. He was just being loaned out to Renault. So yeah, this move now, he's on his own, I guess. Which, you know, maybe is a good thing. He came into Formula One as a Red Bull junior and impressed, and now he'll be able to make a name for himself and make his own moves rather than have Red Bull dictate where he can and can't go. So yeah, it's a great move for Carlos Sainz, a good deal for McLaren, and yeah, I'm sure Sainz himself is delighted that he's Fernando Alonso's replacement. You know, Alonso is his hero, his childhood hero. So I say it must feel really, really good for Sainz to be able to come into the team and be worthy of replacing his hero.
And he even said that he will ask Fernando Alonso for advice how to basically settle into the team quickly. But I mean, they're all professional drivers. Do you really think that he could give him any advice?
Well, I mean, there's no harm in asking anybody, or asking Alonso, yeah. Sorry. I mean, anybody would be, would love to get some advice off Fernando Alonso. And yeah, I mean, Sainz is a professional. I'm sure he'll do a good job there, but, you know, it can't hurt to ask him how yeah, things work or whatever he wants to know. And, you know, Alonso, I'm sure, doesn't really mind too much because he won't be racing next year, so...
Yeah, I mean, the only advice Fernando Alonso can give is all the time you have to leave the space. that's the only thing he knows.
Yeah. I'm sure that there'll be questions about, you know, what did Alonso tell him, and maybe Sainz will just tell him the good things or tell the media the good things that he said, because I'm sure there might be a few negatives in there, but yeah.
You think so?
Well, yeah, I think... Judging by Alonso's team radios over the past few years, I'm sure it's not all going to be sunshine and rainbows when he's giving advice to Sainz.
Yeah, so basically that's the one major news we had in the last week, or yeah, now also approaching the Belgium GP. One thing that wasn't really officially announced, I think, but one thing that happened today as we record on Monday, Force India changed their name on all social media platforms and also, I think, on their website from Sahara Force India to only Force India. And I would assume that's also the name changed happened because of the team acquisition by Lance Stroll Father Stroll and the other investors. Can we read anything into that? I mean, Sahara, I think, was a big sponsor of the team. I mean, they were the title sponsor as well. Does that mean Force India has enough money that they can drop their title sponsor?
I mean, again, we've heard nothing official, so we're just gonna have to sit back and watch how that unfolds. But again, it's not really a big surprise. I mean, you imagine the team next year won't even be called Force India. Well, you know, it could be, but I'd imagine that it would like to change. I mean, we know that Force India themselves have been looking at a name change even before this these new investors came in. So I am a little bit surprised that Sahara has been, well, supposedly has been dropped already. I would have thought maybe could wait till the end of the year, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, it's only still really, really fresh. There's still no official announcement. I'm sure we will get that, either that or, you know, someone hacked into their account and done that. Although I'm sure there, if they were hacked, there'd be a lot more wild things that they could have done rather than take away the Sahara out of the name. But yeah, again, it's not really a big surprise. It, I guess, was sort of expected, but yeah, if it is really official, I would have thought I would have waited until the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, it's a new, well, it's going to be a new era now for this Silverstone based team that, you know, used to be Jordan and all that. So yeah, we'll see what comes next, but I'm sure we'll get some official confirmation, well, hopefully soon, so we know exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And before we come to the second part of this episode where we discuss safety standards in Formula One, maybe let's quickly talk about the Belgian GP in general, or basically a question to you, Fergal. Do you think we will see any driver changes in season, so before the Belgium GP? We heard different kind of rumors, some more crazy than others. But I think the most popular rumor is that Lance Stroll, after the acquisition, might change teams from Williams to Force India. Do you see that happening?
Well, certainly for next year, I see that happening. But in terms of mid-season change, I don't know. I mean, usually you would have thought that the deal would be announced by now. I mean, FP1 in Belgium is only a matter of days away, and yeah, you would imagine that if that was going to happen, it would be announced by now. Of course, it could still happen after the Belgian GP. It could happen before Singapore or something like that. And yeah, I mean, it's very, very possible that it could happen, and it'll be very interesting to see what exactly happens. I mean, if anything is going to materialise, it's going to be Stroll to Force India, you know, more than, well, yeah, definitely really in place of Esteban Ocon, because Perez has a lot of backers at Force India, financial backers at Force India. And then you want to ask, where does that leave Esteban Ocon for the rest of the season? I don't really see him going anywhere, to be honest. I think if Stroll was to leave Williams, I'd imagine Robert Kubica would come in and get the seat there.
That would be story.
Yeah, of course, it's what a lot of people want. But Ocon, it seems, is emerging as a contender for a seat at McLaren alongside Sainz next year. So yeah, I mean, we'll get further updates on that as it all unfolds, but yeah, definitely possible that we could see some sort of mid-season driver changes in the coming weeks.
Or could it be, in Ocon's case, could it be another story similar to Pascal Wehrlein, also supported by Mercedes, big talent, good results, but yeah, then somehow he disappeared. No place for him at Sauber. I mean, I hope not, and I think you agree. I hope not that the same thing happens to Ocon, and hopefully he gets a place, a seat in Formula One for next season, let alone this season. Yeah, but somehow there are some similarities, I feel. But yeah, a lot of rumors. We don't know what is going to happen. I think we have to wait for Thursday or maybe Wednesday at least, so that we should know who's driving where in Belgium. But yeah, generally interesting race coming up. Spa, Francorchamps, one of the most exciting and best tracks on the calendar, in my opinion. And yeah, thinking back to last year, the race was pretty awesome. I mean, I can still remember, I think it was after the safety car restart when Hamilton and Vettel came right behind each other up Eau Rouge, and the great camera shot on top there. That was really great to watch. And yeah, we had a whole race. Vettel and Hamilton were within like 2 seconds the whole race, and it was really exciting to watch. And I hope we can see something similar to that this year. But in terms of podium prediction, who do you think will be stronger in Spa? I guess it's basically the question is, will Ferrari or Mercedes be stronger? What do you think, Fergal?
Yeah, well, I'd imagine that both teams are going to be strong, but who's going to be stronger is once again very, very difficult to read. On paper, you would say that Ferrari really should be stronger. Of course, that doesn't mean that they will be.
Why do you think that?
Well, we've seen so far this year that Ferrari are so efficient in a straight line, and of course Spa is a very, very power-dependent track, and then even after Spa, you have the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, which is probably the most power-dependent track in the whole circuit, except maybe Austria. But we've seen that, you know, when we think a team might be the stronger at that weekend, that doesn't exactly come to be. So it's so hard to predict. I guess it will be really close again between Mercedes and Ferrari, and I really hope it is close, because it would be great to have another Titanic race to start off the second half of the year. But in terms of podium prediction, like I said, it's so difficult to really say who I think is going to be the strongest. So again, it's going to be a bit of a guess. Just going
in contrast to all the other races where we exactly knew what was going to happen.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I mean, we knew before we even started, you know, who was going to win. But I'm just going to go with my gut feeling on this one once again, which most times have been pretty wrong. But I'm going to go for Vettel to win the race. Maybe Hamilton second, you know, Vettel closing in that title gap. He needs to start doing that, because 24 points, you know, it is a lot. I mean, we've seen that this year it's pretty unpredictable, but things could get pretty uncomfortable if that gap gets too big. So Vettel first, Hamilton second, and let's go with Raikkonen third. A boring usual podium, but that's my prediction.
Well, you say your gut feeling has been more wrong than true this season. Well, it has been better than mine, because I think you are leading our prediction table by 16 to 13 points in your way. So not that bad. But and I have to say, I would predict Mercedes to do better than Ferrari, I have to be honest, because if you look back to Silverstone, for example, where we also had one or two long straights, some fast corners, as we do have in Belgium, they were pretty good. And also in Austria, we saw a good race for Mercedes with a lot of straights. And of course, you have to say there you had more traction zones compared to Spa. So also considering that Hamilton is a bit of a Spa master, to call him I think last year he outqualified Bottas by half a second or something, which is pretty incredible to think of. So yeah, my podium prediction is Hamilton first, Vettel second, and Bottas third. So two Mercedes on the podium.
Yeah, I mean, we'll wait and see. But I just wanted to say quickly before we move on, about the Belgian Grand Prix in itself, I think it's one race that I really hope that we never lose from the calendar. It always seems year after year we always get a really exciting race up and down the pack, and with the closeness of the teams this year, even at the front and at the midfield as well, I think we're really set for a really, really exciting battle, and I'm really looking forward to it, because it seems like a long, long time ago when the Hungarian Grand Prix was on.
Absolutely. So, yep, totally agree on that. And, yeah, difficult to get the transition right now to our next topic. Well, our general topic, or the second topic, is safety standards in Formula One. But it's not totally out of context because, well, today we learned that Robert Wickens, and maybe you've heard of that as well, because Sergio Perez retweeted, I think, the IndyCar tweet. So I guess a lot of Formula One fans, or some Formula One fans, might have heard of the IndyCar incident as well. He had a pretty big crash in an IndyCar race, and
that's putting it lightly.
Yeah, I mean, I only to be honest with you, I only saw that one tweet, or maybe two tweets, and a short clip of the incident, and it looked really bad. But yeah, maybe Fergal, you can give us more information on the whole thing, and maybe on the status of Robert Wickens as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was watching the race live yesterday, and it was so scary. It was a really, really tough hour and a half, 2 hours that followed the crash, because we had no updates whatsoever on Robert Wickens. We know now that, we heard afterwards that he was alert and he was awake, which was the main thing, because genuinely there was real fear on my end that, he was more than seriously injured, that, you know, we may have actually lost Robert Wickens. And I think, you know, he suffered, he broke both of his legs, one of his arms, and he has a minor spine injury. He will be able to recover from the whole thing, and you know, I think, you know, two broken legs, a broken arm, and a spine injury is a horrible injury. It's a horrible injuries to have. But when you compare it alongside, you know, the fact that he was very, very close to being killed, it's good news. You know, it's really good news. And the incident, you know, he was going alongside with Ryan Hunter-Reay, who also, we have to say, is very, very lucky to be alive, because the top of Wickens' car was inches from his head, from Hunter-Reay's head.
And of course, IndyCar doesn't use the halo, right?
No, IndyCar has no head protection whatsoever. They tested a screen before the start of the season. Scott Dixon tested a screen, and I think, well, F1, well, the FAA and IndyCar are working together to come up with some sort of efficient head protection system, and IndyCar will introduce it certainly in the future. But the race the crash between Wickens and Hunter-Reay, and of course there was a few other cars involved. There was James Hinchcliffe, there was Pietro Fittipaldi, there was Takuma Sato, there was plenty of drivers involved. But I genuinely think it was probably the biggest IndyCar accident since Dan Weldon's, the crash that took Dan Weldon's life back in 2010, where there was, nearly the whole field was involved in that. I think it was the biggest accident in IndyCar I've seen since then. IndyCar will introduce head protection systems, and, you know, safety, well, head protection here, you know, It I think Wickens still would have had a major injuries without his without, even if the head protection was there. But Hunter-Reay
wouldn't have helped his legs, right?
Yeah, well, no. The height and the speed that he was going at, it was just absolutely incredible. Like, it was so scary to watch. But
how fast was he going, actually?
I'm not entirely sure on the actual speed he was going, but this is at Pocono, this is on a super speedway, so he would have been going upwards of 170, 180, maybe close to 200 mile an hour.
That's in kilometers. How much is that?
No, 160, 170 mile an hour. It is on a super speedway. You know, it's one of the fastest. Pocono is one of the fastest tracks in IndyCar, and let's not forget, I mean, Pocono is the scene of Justin Wilson's fatal crash in 2015, where he was hit in the head by a piece of debris.
And so I just checked. 170 is 270 kph.
Yeah. So yeah, huge speeds.
A lot.
And actually, I'm just going to bring in Justin Wilson's case here. The FIA, when they did their test, they concluded that in the halo would have actually saved Justin Wilson's life, which is again another argument that maybe IndyCar needs head protection. Of course, in F1, but yeah, I mean, these cars, even in F1, I mean, the car is so much safer with the halo, but that doesn't make it safe. You know, these cars are still incredibly dangerous when you're driving at the speeds that they are driving at.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk more about Formula One safety then, as, I mean, in the end, we are a Formula One podcast, and I mean, to end the IndyCar topic, I think we all send our best wishes to Robert Wickens and hope for a speedy recovery there. Yeah, but Formula One safety, I mean, I watched, a few years ago, there was that documentary called One or something that showed the history of Formula One and also the improvements of safety. I mean, can you only take or go 20 years back, the safety standards back then were horrible. I mean, parking retired cars like a few inches away from the racing line, and all the fences and barriers being like very fragile, and you don't even have to talk about cockpit protection. I mean, the improvement in terms of safety in Formula One have been amazing, and it's so good that, yeah, apart from, of course, Jules Bianchi, we didn't have any death in Formula One since 1994, of course. But how would you rate the current safety standards in Formula One? Of course, I would say they are probably the pinnacle in motorsports in terms of safety standards. We do have the halo, we do have the chassis that withstands forces of, I don't know how much kilos they test in crash testing, but you would assume that Formula One cars are the safest cars in motorsport. Or do you think that I always hear that IndyCar uses some, I don't know, some safety cell or whatever? Is that stronger than a Formula One chassis? Do you know that?
Yeah, well, IndyCar has a safety hub, basically, that protects the driver. I mean, if we think back to the Indianapolis 500 race in 2017, where Scott Dixon had a huge crash, where he flew over the top of another car, and the car actually hit the barrier, and basically it's designed to, the car is designed to split in half in IndyCar. So I mean, the safety standards for both series are incredibly high. I mean, in recent years, if you want to take incidents from both series, I mean, you just want to take in IndyCar, for example, the Wickens crash yesterday, and then in Formula One, you know, you have in 2016 we had that huge crash for Fernando Alonso, and yeah, I mean, like you said, 20-30 years ago, there was no chance of a driver walking away from an incident like that, and the safety has improved so much. I mean, so much, and you know, up to the 70s or the early 70s, drivers didn't even have seatbelts in the car. And it's crazy to think of how far safety has come, and it's a great thing. I mean, I see these comments and complaints sometimes from people that say, oh, Formula One is too safe and all this, blah blah blah. I mean, I don't watch Formula One to tune in and hopefully see a crash and see a driver get injured. I mean, it's preposterous. I mean, I tune in to watch the best races in the world go wheel to wheel at high speeds on the edge, and you know, crashes are a part of Formula One, always have been, always will be, but you know, a driver getting hurt or worse doesn't have to be part of the show to make it more exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, these are human beings as well. They have families, they have loved ones. I mean, it shouldn't be in our expectations to think that there should be a chance for racing drivers to be killed or injured while racing, because that really doesn't excite me whatsoever. I just want to see close, hard racing, and right now that's what we get in Formula One. We have these really, really safe cars that that allowed the drivers to push really hard and race really hard against each other.
I mean, yeah, I think we have to differentiate a bit, maybe. I agree there are those people that say, oh, Formula One drivers, they shouldn't, or they should be injured when they do, when they make a mistake or something. I mean, that's nuts. I agree. That's totally, I don't know, unacceptable to see a driver being hurt or even worse, being killed or something like that. On the other hand, I can understand some fans when they say tracks are getting too safe. I mean, I'm all for making the cars safe and doing everything that can be done to the barriers, you know, with the Tech Pro barriers in the last couple of years. I think they made some good steps in terms of driver safety. But in terms of, yeah, just, yeah, removing grass, removing gravel, and yeah, basically making it a big car park like Abu Dhabi is on some tracks, I really, really don't like that, you know. And as you can see with tracks like Spa, well, of course, you have to say they also removed a lot of grass and gravel there as well. But I mean, the perfect example is Suzuka. And I think if you ask 20 Formula One drivers, 18 of them or so will say Suzuka is one of the best tracks. And I think it's not only because of fast corners, but also because if you make a mistake, you are punished. Not in terms of that you might get hurt or something, but you lose a lot of time and yeah, go off track.
Yeah, I think, you know, it would be good for Formula One to look into that sort of balance. I mean, I do agree with you. It's on the side of, you know, excitement. If a driver goes wide, it's a lot more exciting if there's grass or something there to punish his lap, rather than you know, more tarmac where he can just pull the car back onto the circuit with ease.
And I still have the idea. Let's put the curb there, then I don't know, maybe a meter of AstroTurf, but then 2 meters of real grass, and then you can put asphalt there, but just so that the driver has a little bit of punishment and you can't accelerate or do anything on real grass.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be clear, like you already said, it's not about the driver getting punished over getting injured. It's no. You know, seeing his lap time ruined, and that would sort of, it would really separate, you know, the good drivers from the great drivers, seeing which can keep it on the track and keep composed in the whole situation. Mm-hmm. So on that side, I do agree with you, you know. And yeah, to be honest, that's not really anything, in my opinion, about it doesn't have, in my mind, anything to do with safety, you know. It's to do with the excitement of the yeah, for the fans, and I guess the composure of the drivers. But I'm sure, you know, some sort of solution could be worked out where it's both safe and unforgiving when a driver runs off wide. But you know, Formula One has been updating and upgrading its safety standards for years and years and years now, and I mean, I just wonder how much safer these cars can actually get, because they really are so, like, really, really safe. I mean, when a driver has a heavy collision with a barrier, you don't expect them to get injured. I mean, I seen just came across it on YouTube, just it was came up in my recommended. It was a replay of Brendan Hartley's crash in Silverstone in FP3.
I was just saying, funnily enough, I just thought of Hartley's crash in Barcelona, which was also quite hard.
Yeah, so, like, you know, just crashes like that, even this year, you know, 20, 30 years ago, the outcome must have been so different. But there's never really any point anymore where a driver has a crash into the barriers where I think, oh, he's hurt. I kind of just assume that he's okay, because I know it's maybe not the best thing to assume that, but I think the standard has been raised so much, the standard of safety has been raised so much, that we're so used to seeing these drivers walk away from big collisions, which of course is a great thing. And yeah, it's fantastic. And you know, with the head protection coming in, some people like it, some people don't like it. I've said from the very beginning, you know, it doesn't take anything away from the show. If you think that the drivers needs to be some sort of element of danger in the sport, I really don't agree with that whatsoever, because I'm all about the racing. And yeah, I mean, these cars, again, they might be safer, but that doesn't make them completely safe. You can still get hurt in some crashes. So but really, in the last 20-30 years, FIA has improved safety so much, and it can only really, I don't really know what more they can do. But if it's safe, and if they can bring in some things to make it even better and still keep the show as exciting as it is, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, who knows, maybe they can, or they do, find some new materials. I don't know, maybe a mixture of carbon with I don't know what, that could improve the chassis safety without adding much weight or something. Who knows? I mean, we do have clever people in our world, and I'm sure they will come up with something new and something that is safer than our current materials, or something like that. But I mean, it is, as if you could read my mind. I also, to end this episode, I wanted to ask you again about the Halo. I mean, we talked a lot about the Halo this year, but also last year when they introduced it. But now, after half a season, do you still care about that? And also, to our listeners, let us know on Twitter and maybe on YouTube, if you're watching our podcast videos there, do you still care about the Halo, or is it now just a part of the car and you don't even notice it anymore? What about you, Fergal?
I mean, I'm used to the Halo, if that's maybe what you're trying to get at. But you know, the Halo, it's not a device that's placed there to upset fans for how it looks. It's there to protect the drivers, and I said from the very beginning, I mean, if it doesn't affect the show, if it doesn't affect the racing, then yeah, I guess I don't really, you know, care that it's there, because it's there for a very, very good reason. And this year it hasn't affected anything at all. I've grown used to it very quickly, a lot quicker than I actually thought I originally would. But no, I don't have any issue whatsoever with the Halo. I mean, of course, there are some more better looking concepts out there, but again, that's not what it's about. But you know, I'm sure the Halo, it won't be a long term thing. I'm sure if Formula One can come up with especially with Liberty Media in, I think if Formula One can produce a system that's or a concept that's just as safe as the Halo, if not safer, and looks better, they'll introduce it.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, it's like with everything, and basically with most people, whether it's a new smartphone or a new car or whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be much different, or it might have some a new design, but you always want to get the new one, and you always think the new one looks better and so on. And I kind of have the same thing with Formula One cars. I mean, the 2017 cars, now looking at them, they somehow look old, you know. The newer 2018 cars, those are the current cars, and they do have the Halo. And when you look at the 2017 cars without the Halo, you think like, ugh, that's a 2017 car. It doesn't have the Halo. It's an old one, you know. And so I kind of already got used to it, as you said. And it's so strange, because at the beginning of the season, I was totally, and we had a lot of discussions about that, against the Halo in terms of the visuals. And it's amazing that after half the season, you already got used to it. And yeah, I mean, for me, I always look through the Halo, and I only focus my eyes on the driver's head and maybe on the car around him. So the Halo, really, for me, is now part of the car. And I think it is good that that is the case, and let's hope that, or I would assume that this is the same case for many of the other fans, right?
Yeah, I mean, like I already said, I got used to it very quickly, and yeah, I mean, if fans are getting used to it being there and don't mind it anymore, that's great, because I mean, the amount of negative comments that I've seen around the place regarding the Halo was amazing. But I mean, there's so much with the, maybe the title fight this year has distracted, and the good races have distracted people from the Halo, but you know, as long as we're getting good races and exciting fights at the front and throughout the field, then at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, and that's what that's what really matters.
Yep, absolutely agree 100%. So as I said, let us know what you think about the Halo, and let's hope for a very exciting race in Belgium. So until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.